I thought maybe to start with the Mining District Secretary, Johnny Brashear, seeing as how it was about 3 a.m. and a good time to have a friendly conversation. Me and Celia, we hiked down them dark streets of Swamp Creek to the two-story board and batten building that housed the offices of the Mining District on the first floor and Brashear's rooms upstairs. I steered her up them wooden stairs behind the building. We got up there, and just to be on the safe side, I pulled that iron and then knocked. Nothing happened for a while the moon dipped behind some stringer clouds. 3 a.m. was a pretty good time, I thought. Finally, the door opened a piece.
What?
I pushed hard, and then we were in the doorway, and he couldn't slam her shut. He was wearing one of them nightshirts. I'd heard tell of such things, baggy cotton dresses, but I'd never seen one live on a body.
Time for you to do some explaining, Brashear.
What are you talking about? Get out of here!
You're gonna open up that office down there, and we're gonna look at some records. And you're gonna tell us how come you took the Fat Tuesday mine and gave it to Carter Scruples.
Come back in the morning.
You crook. You gonna come downstairs and show us the books.
She was waving that little lady gun at him.
Know what'll happen next? I'm gonna shoot you in the crotch. And after that, I'll shoot your fingers and hands off. You want to go through the rest of your life getting fed because you can't hold a spoon? You want the friendly fellow next door to wipe your butt with a corn cob because you can't?
He wasn't paying her no attention.
No!
She sent a shot sizzling past his ear. That sort of got his attention. Then she pointed her lady gun straight at his family jewels, and he got the message. I had to hand it to Celia. She was a match for Armand Argo, all right, and most everybody else come around. And she didn't neglect to pull that spent brass and shove another in there, ready to perforate the mining camp secretary.
I'm going to haul you to Butte. I'm a deputy.
I'm thinking maybe we'll haul you to Butte. Haul you in and lock you up there after I tell that sheriff what you're doing around here.
There's nothing to see.
There's records, and they've been fixed to make Carter Scruples look legal, even if he ain't.
Brashear, he didn't say nothing.
How'd you steal the mine from me and Armand?
It was all perfectly up and up.
Show me.
She waved that little lady revolver right at his crotch.
Don't!
He placed a limp white hand between that lady gun and his jewels. Real slow, he lit a lamp and pulled a big ledger book off a shelf.
Look for yourself.
You show us.
All I do is keep track of who owns what.
Where's the Fat Tuesday?
That's claim number 47.
He thumbed through the ledger. Each claim was on a separate page. When he got to number 47, he paused. At the top was a description.
From claim cairn, 600 feet west to staked corner, then 1,500 feet north to corner, then 600 east to corner, then 1,500 feet south to cairn. They're all like that.
Beneath was simply a record of the original claimant and transfers of ownership. The Fat Tuesday had gone from Willis Bank to Armand Argo to Transactions Incorporated. That transfer was dated a week earlier, which sure interested me.
Who come here to record the new ownership?
Carter Scruples. He came with a bill of sale from Argo, so I recorded it proper.
What bill of sale?
Proper bill of sale, signed by your man.
Show it to me.
That's in Scruples' possession.
How much was paid for the claim?
Well, how should I know? Me, I just keep the books is all.
Show me the Hermit mine.
Well, that'd be claim number 122. That was one of the last ones filed.
He paged through and found it.
That was filed on by six men, as you can see, standard 600 by 1,500 foot claim and transferred to transactions, let's see, 2 months ago.
And he showed you a bill of sale?
Yep. That's how I keep the books.
And did you challenge it?
Scruples had a proper bill. That's all that's needed. I'm just the recording secretary, keeping a legal record.
This stinks.
Celia waved her little lady gun at his privates.
Stop making it look right. You show me the true bill now, or I'll blow your balls off.
That little widow lady sure was determined. All of us knew that Armand Argo hadn't sold his mine to anyone, but there it was on the books, looking legal and proper. Now, I ain't got the brains to figure it out. Crooks are a lot smarter than me, which is why they're crooks. There's crooks, and the rest of us are just ordinary dumb folks trying to do the right thing.
Show me, or I'll pull the trigger at 3, 1... 2.
All right.
He reached for another gray ledger book on the shelf. This one smaller. It had a label on it that said, Assessments.
District assesses every mine every year. That's sort of a tax to keep this office going and settle disputes and write out deeds and claims. If a mine falls behind on the assessments, it can be auctioned off, and that's how Scruples buys them up.
Auctioned off?
They hold auctions 1 minute past midnight on the announced day. And Scruples, he's the only one who shows up.
You turd. What's he paying you?
You accusing me of something?
I'll shoot your picker off.
This district is run up and up.
Celia put a bullet between his legs, right through that nightshirt.
Oh, my God.
I didn't see no blood gushing down his leg, so I guess she spared his privates.
I don't know how your crooked game works, but here's what you're gonna do. You're gonna write me a deed that says that Armand Argo or his heirs owns the Fat Tuesday. Then you're gonna write the same thing for every other claim the Scruples took over.
He'd kill me!
Then get out of town or start writing now. Because if you don't, you won't have any fingers left. And that's just the beginning of the part you'll lose.
I sure had to hand it to her. Brashear hunkered down at his desk, dipped the nib into the ink pot, and began scribbling out deeds and recording them in his ledgers. She was looking over his shoulder, too, making sure he's doing it proper. I never seen such a woman. She knew more words than I thought there were. She took each deed, compared it to the original, and tucked it under her arm.
No.
I didn't know if all this paperwork did much good. Not with that army Scruples had roaming around out there. But at least it was something to hand them miners, them that hadn't fled the district. If Scruples was going to get this Swamp Creek district, it'd be straight shooting iron theft. And not a lot of stealing only a law clerk could figure out. But then I remembered something that Carter Scruples told me when I was tied up with that bunch. He said he didn't know a thing about mining, and he was going to sell the whole Swamp Creek district once he got his hands on the mines and get out. So that was why he needed all that paper. He had to prove to any buyer that he owned all them mines. Him and Amanda weren't going to get far without those deeds, or claims, or whatever. I never did know all the proper words, but it didn't matter none. They needed good paper to sell out, and that's why they was putting the screws to the district secretary. Old Brashear, he sat there in his nightshirt, sweating, looking into that muzzle of Celia's little lady pistol now and then, but he kept scratching, and she kept eyeing the result and comparing it with the ledgers. It took an hour, and it wasn't long until dawn when he finally finished up.
Oh.
Open that safe.
I'd hardly noticed the safe. It had pink cupids painted on black enamel.
No, what's in there's mine.
Which finger do I blow off first?
Well, then you'll never get it open.
Fine, right ball or left.
Oh.
He got religion all right and began spinning that dial, and pretty soon he creaked that heavy door open, and we got a look in there. It was just a little safe after you got past them thick walls, but it was stuffed with flannel bags, and they sure was heavy.
How much gold is that?
That's my personal money.
That's what Carter Scruples paid you, and we're taking it to the sheriff in Butte.
I sure marveled at that girl.
But that's mine!
We'll let him get it straightened out. Now you gonna get out of town before Scruples come hunting you?
Well, the deal was, he got himself dressed and packed, and we followed him over to Bunsen's livery, where he woke up the proprietor and got himself a buggy and a trotter, and tossed his stuff in there and headed toward Virginia City, just about the time dawn was breaking.
Don't know whether we'll see him again.
Guess we'd better take this loot up to that there sheriff in Butte before Scruples gets a hold of it.
Lot of gold in there. Maybe we could just bury it.
No, we're gonna do it right. It sure was funny what gold did to good people. It don't belong to us. Well, I had second thoughts about that. I didn't know that there sheriff in Butte.
Of course, then, for all I know, the sheriff's Brashear's kid brother and twice as crooked. Maybe we better sort this out ourselves.
But I sure didn't know what to do with all that stuff.
You or Armin got a trunk?
Yes. There's an old leather one with straps in our rooms.
Well, let's get this stuff into it. I want everything. Them ledgers, that seal, that stamp, the blank forms Brashear used, all that stuff. And the bag of gold, too.
It was getting near dawn, so pretty quick we got into them rooms Armand and Celia had before the mining camp woke up. She dug out the old trunk, which looked like a little casket of leather, and even had an ancient lock on it.
We opened it up, found it was empty, and pretty quick we loaded the mining camper ledgers and papers in there and put the bag of gold on top, and then some of Armand's duds to sort of cover the whole thing, and then we closed the lid. I turned the lock and gave Celia the skeleton key to keep. The whole thing didn't weigh a lot, maybe 30 pounds. I had a pretty good idea what to do with it. I didn't want it out in the open country or at some abandoned mine site where someone like Glenn would find it. I wanted it hid in plain sight, and that meant the Wells Fargo office, where they stored trunks on a shelf for pickup by customers.
Celia, can you run down to the Wells Fargo and get a tag for the trunk and see who's laying about?
She nodded and took off into the gray dawn. Swamp Creek was still mighty quiet. She come back with a tie-on tag.
I didn't see anyone. The clerk, he just handed the tag to me.
I'm no good at writing, and it's all I can do to print letters. I never did figure out how to write that script, so I let her do the job.
Choose a simple name.
Philippe Desiree?
That's simple? I guess you think so. Make it to him.
She wrote the name on the tag.
I gotta look like someone else. Armand got a hat.
She found two. One of them a black silk stovepipe, and the other a white straw Panama. I thought the stovepipe might do just fine, so I left my own slouch hat there and screwed the stovepipe down. She found a string tie and helped me wrap that thing around my neck, since I didn't know nothing. I hefted that old trunk, and we headed out the door. We got that trunk down to the Wells Fargo office and shelved before the town began to stir, and I thought we'd done a good job. So, the keys to the kingdom were sitting there in Wells Fargo, and maybe that'd slow scruples down a little. We slipped over to old Billy Blues, and he was up and around.
Where were you? I took your blankets off the pool table.
Busy night.
He looked Celia over, but didn't say nothing. She was too young to be hanging around in a saloon, but nobody paid no mind to that in Swamp Creek.
Billy, I need your help, but you'd have to be real quiet. These here are deeds to all them mines out there. They're good, signed by Brashear. I want you to hand them real quiet to the owners of the mines when they come in here. Like if those boys from the Hermit Mine show up, just give them this.
I pawed through the pile and found the one for that mine and showed it to Billy. He sort of cocked an eyebrow.
I thought transactions got all the paper on those mines.
Well, Billy, someone sort of persuaded Johnny Brashear that it would be healthy for him if he fixed up these deeds.
You?
Nope, not me. But I didn't mind it at all.
He glanced briefly at Celia, not crediting her with anything, and that was fine with me.
Yeah, I'll do it. But some of them boys, they packed up and left the country.
Well, do what you can, and guard those deeds real good. They're good as gold. Leastways, that's how I understand it. Those boys have got their minds back, if they can keep scruples out.
That's a big if.
I didn't argue it. I didn't know if that paper would do them any good at all. But at least it would make it harder for Carter's scruples to steal them minds. Billy turned to Celia.
Have we met?
No.
I'm Billy.
Pleased to meet you.
She let it stay like that. Billy was a little miffed at not getting a handle on her, but he tried not to show it.
Guess we'd better go.
Billy studied on us as we walked out of there. He sure wanted to put a name to her, but if she didn't feel like telling him one, that was her choice. We decided to head up to her mine. Celia said she'd walk and lead the mule. It was Aggie's mule, and I sure didn't know what to do with it. But we started anyway, me riding, Celia leading that four-footed beast.
Hello, the mine!
I half expected the muzzle of a gun to poke from a window somewhere, but nothing happened. When we finally pulled into the mine yard, there were a few miners standing at the shaft, watching us ride up.
You fellas waiting to do your shift?
Who are you?
Most people call me Cotton.
Who you work for?
Right now I'm working for her. She owns this mine.
They stared at Celia, not quite believing.
Well, this sign says the mine's closed and owned by transactions. That you?
No. I'm Armand Argo's widow, and this mine belongs to me. I have the papers.
Well, I guess you owe us some shift money. We've been working 4 days. If this here mine shut, then pay us off.
Celia didn't even hesitate.
You go on over to the miners' exchange saloon and put in your claim for day wage, and I'll see that Muggsy Pitt pays you. And later, when we open up, I'll want you back. The mine's been stolen by those people in the Pullman car, but I'm going to get it back.
We're all $3 a day, man. That's $12 for all of us. Now, I don't know what we're going to live on now. You got to open fast or we'll be gone.
Give me a week. I'll add something to your pay to tide you over.
Can't make no promises.
Neither can I. You tell the others to get back wages from Muggsy.
She walked over to the place where the transaction sign was nailed to a beam and ripped it off. But she kept it, and I wondered what she'd do with it. We left the miners there. I was real impressed with that girl.
You got money to pay them?
Armand was a gambler. He had a bank.
We went back to Armand's rooms, picked up some half eagles, and headed into the miners' exchange to find Muggsy swamping the floor. In short order, Muggsy agreed to record the wage claims and pay out cash she would provide and keep some records. She was all business, and I could see that Muggsy respected her.
Give me a list of who got paid what.
I'll get it done.
If you don't, your life isn't worth beans.
Celia sure had a way about her. When we stepped outside, it was still morning, but a cloud sort of come along just then. It was Lugar himself, Scruple's straw boss, walking down the main drag with a big old revolver hanging off his waist. He sure was ugly. I hardly never seen anyone so much like a cloud covering the sun.
Looking for you.
I'm not looking for you.
Carter wants to talk to you.
I got nothing to say to him.
Oh, I think you do, Cotton. You come along. Bring her too.
He stood there, ugly as a dill pickle. So I finally agreed. There was old Scruples himself, wearing some sort of red velvet robe and puffing on a pipe. I sure was getting tired of his parlor.
Ah, there you are, Monsieur Desiree. Welcome to our humble home.
That's when I knew all hell had busted loose. I stood there, sort of leaning on one foot and the other, waiting for the rest.
We have snitches all over town, Cotton. Nothing transpires in Swamp Creek without my knowing of it in minutes. The Wells Fargo Expressman earns a silver dollar for me now and then. I knew about that trunk about 5 minutes after you had deposited it. You see? There it is.
He waved toward the old trunk, sitting on top of his writing table.
I'm glad everything's there. You missed nothing. You've even returned the gold I paid to Brashear. And you did me a real favor getting rid of him. Now that I own nearly all the mines, I'm voting myself the next mining district secretary. This is a fine new turn of events, and I wish to thank you for it. I've already reissued the claim papers to the company. I suppose that black stovepipe hat was Argo's, poor fella. He was trespassing, you know. All we can do is warn people off our property.
I pretty near jumped on that swine. But he had a couple of his goons hovering right there. I think maybe Celia was fixing to shoot some of them, but I didn't see no profit in it.
I'm quite able to read your intentions. They're always very simple, because you are a simple man. But of course, the first person to be hurt would be the young widow here, and the second person to be hurt would be you. And that would be rather foolish, wouldn't it?
I could see how things stood in that there palace car, so I just stood real quiet.
You're done for, Cotton. I'm giving you until sundown to leave the district. If you're still around tonight, you might walk into flying lead.
He turned to Celia.
I'd hate to see the young lady suffer the same fate.
There sure wasn't no sense in arguing with the man, with a few of his thugs lounging around there. I thought I saw Arnold in the corridor, and I suppose the apocalypse had sat his dainty ass in some little chair around there.
We might even let Critter out there survive. I'm always charitable toward innocent animals.
You son of a...
Next I knew, I was lying on the grass somewheres, my head hurting bad, and a few of them miners looking down on me. It took me a while to get a handle on where I was. I didn't even know why I was there at first. My head throbbed bad, and the rest of me hurt bad, too. I peered up at them, and they was looking worried.
You all right?
I didn't feel all right, so I just lay there.
This your horse?
Sure enough, there was Critter, and we were on the Swamp Creek Road outside of town. That's where they put me.
You got something stuck in your shirt pocket.
I reached for it, and my fingers clawed a small piece of paper. I couldn't see well yet, with my head all fogged up, but I got the message. It was a bullseye penciled in. Someone had gone to some trouble to draw them black and white circles.
It's a bullseye.
I guess someone doesn't like you.
That's about half of it.
Oh. I sat up, and they helped me up. I stood real shaky. Celia was nowhere in sight, and I wondered what they'd done with her. I almost didn't want to know.
Guess I fell off my nag.
I didn't think a one of them believed it, but they was being polite.
I'm all right now.
I took a step or two and landed on my ass.
Guess I'm not quite all right yet, but I'll get there.
I stood up again and got me over to Critter, who let me get on board. My hat sat on a knot on my head. I lifted it and thanked the miners.
Yeah, they changed my name to Target. You call me Target.
You sure you're all right, Target?
You ain't seen a girl around here, have you?
No, no girl. We just walking along the road and there you were.
Well, I'll find her.
I put heels to Critter. And I headed toward town. It was mid-afternoon. I had until sundown. The only thought in my head was finding Celia.
No.
Critter sure was mean. Every time he stepped, my head hammered. Then he lifted into a trot, and my head couldn't believe it. He was getting even with me for all the times he stood around waiting for me to sober up. I got to laughing, even though I hurt bad. I'd given old Carter's scruples a good wonk. Last I knew, he was flying backward in that little railroad car parlor, looking so surprised he couldn't believe what was happening. That made it worth it. The sight of him going ass over heels backward done my heart good. So I drove Critter on into town. I didn't much care. I thought maybe to fire a few shots in the air, but decided I'd need them bullets for the future. I still was mad, and now I was going to take on that whole lot of killers and crooks old Scruples got together, and I wasn't going to quit until I drove the whole bunch out of Swamp Creek and blowed up that railroad car into scrap metal. All Scruples done was made me real determined and bullheaded. Right then, I was so bullheaded and painheaded that I knew nothing was going to slow me down. I thought my first business was to find Celia and make sure she was safe. Old Scruples, he knew it too. And if I was still in town at sundown, looking for her, they'd start sniping from any alley or rooftop they chose. I'd been warned. I sure ain't bright, but I could see that the jaws of that bear trap were wide open. At least I still had me a little time till sundown. I got Critter hid by sundown, but you wouldn't believe how or where, so I won't tell you. I slipped into the shadows, casing the town for what was up, who was up, and where I might find Celia. In one of them saloons, I spotted them three thugs of Scruples that had been around a while and wouldn't give me a proper name. There were Garfield, Arthur, and Cleveland leaning into the bar, nursing mugs of beer. Well, that was something anyway. I continued my tour, wanting to know which of Scruples' men were hanging around. I peered into the Deuce Saloon, which was a low dive full of people who'd rather shoot than talk. Sitting in there drinking amber stuff was Lugar, and beside him was Rudolph Costello Gland. Big stuff. So Scruples was making sure I left town, and he'd put his whole bunch in here to enforce it. That meant that the Apocalypse and Arnold were floating around too. Carter Scruples was never one to go halfway. Suddenly, the dark didn't seem so friendly around there.
Damn.
I peered around, looking for that deadly little killer and the hulking eye gouger who hung around with him. I hardly dared move, for fear movement would show me, and I could no longer risk even a peep through a lit window. I gradually ghosted back between a couple of log buildings and listened real sharp. Sometimes, ears were better than eyes in thick dark. Sure enough, I thought I heard some silky sound, so I ghosted along a log wall until I got to the creek bottoms beside town. I stood there in deep shade, in a corner so dark that no one would see me. I stood there so long I got itchy, but it paid off. Moving real quiet along the valley was the long and short of Scruple's army. It made my head start hurting again just to see Arnold out there. Them two was inspecting every alley and space between buildings, very businesslike. I drew my peacemaker, knowing I'd aim at that smooth little killer first and Arnold second. But mostly, I didn't do nothing. They missed me. I was shadowed up pretty good. That's all that saved me. I guess they figured I was in town. Maybe they saw me get a bait of hay or something. Scruples had his whole army out, checking for me. And where was Celia? Probably still up at the Pullman. There'd be more guards there. New ones I'd not had the pleasure of meeting. Scruples was hiring whatever army he could hire, and it wasn't hard to get a few more hard cases. I waited for the Apocalypse and his pal to get to the end of the row of buildings, and then I slipped straight across the creek and made for the Pullman Palace. I got up there, and after some poking around, I noticed something peculiar. The outhouse was tied shut. The door was closed, and rope wrapped around the whole crapper. I edged up and tried the door a little.
Let me out!
It's Cotton! You in there?
Carl, get me out!
That did it. I found the knots at the back of the crapper, worked them loose, and got the door open. Man, it stank in there.
Whoa!
That one didn't even have a quarter moonsault in it for a vent. I got her untied and took her real gentle by the arm, and we slid through shadows. We didn't know when that crowd was going to come back to the bunkhouse after enjoying a few shots of booze in Swamp Creek. I swore a few times that someone was watching, but we made it to the pine forest, and only then did we whisper a little.
What happened?
Scruples wanted to spend the night with me, but I told him I'd turn him into a soprano if he did. That cooled his ardor some. He was still hurting from the fist you landed. He got a big black and blue spot coming up on his jaw.
Then they put you out there?
They didn't know what to do with me. They thought I'm a lady friend of yours.
That explains why they didn't just bury you somewhere.
She eyed me silently. A quarter moon was rising.
I don't ever want to be locked in an outhouse again.
I led her to a reel I knew of, and she knelt beside it and washed herself, cupping her hands in the cold water and rubbing every inch of flesh she could.
My clothes stink. I'd like to go to my rooms and change.
Well, there might be a little surprise in there.
She eyed me, waiting for an explanation.
You'll see.
You put a horse in my rooms?
Whoa. Critter, he butted me so hard I toppled back. Celia lit a lamp and looked around. I'd rolled up the rug so it wouldn't get messed up. The floor seemed a mite damp, but everything else looked all right, until Celia walked into her bedroom.
Oh my God! Look at what that stupid creature did to my bed!
I walked in there and saw the trouble right away. There was a pile of horse apples on her bed. It sort of stained the coverlet.
I'll fix it.
No, you're gonna get that animal out of here and keep him out of here.
She paused a little.
Thanks for cutting me loose. If you can get the mine back, I'll find some way to thank you. But you and Critter can't stay here.
I was sort of disappointed. I thought maybe me and her and Critter could make a threesome up there in her rooms, but she wasn't having no part of that.
All right. I'll get him out.
Soon as we hit bottom, I saw Celia up there, shaking the horse apples out of that coverlet. There went my dreams. I was about to ride off.
You owe me.
I turned and found the barkeep from below standing there.
My saloon's a mess. You ruined it. That horse got a bladder bigger than a fire barrel, and it all come down on my customers.
I didn't know what to do, but I remembered that eagle in my pocket.
Here, this'll fix it.
I handed it to him.
Fix about half of it.
He grumbled, but he was getting more than he figured on, so he wasn't grumbling too bad.
You can fix me a sandwich, and I'll be gone.
He did it. I went in there, and he cut me a slab of beef, rustled from some ranch, and laid it between two slabs of sourdough bread and handed her to me. It sure tasted fine.
See ya.
You're cotton, ain't you?
I nodded.
Them thugs was looking hard.
I'll be looking hard for them, soon as I figure what to do.
He just shook his head. I'd seen that sort of head shake before. It's how sane people dismiss crazy people. They just shake their heads, and we all know what they're thinking. I peered around real sharp, but there was nothing around, except some few clouds was chasing the moon. So Critter and I forded the creek and headed into the woods. I sure didn't know where I would go. A hunted man ain't got many choices. It wasn't far from dawn.
Critter, take me where you will.
Critter snapped at me and turned downstream, away from the mines, and settled into a cheerful jog. He was plumb happy to get out of that upstairs jail. We were jogging along when we got to the big place owned by Cletus Carboy, owner and proprietor of the Big Mother Gold Mine. And that blasted critter turned in then and there and followed a graveled road toward the man's house. Well, I thought, that wasn't a bad idea. It might be the safest place for me in the county, the one place that scruples didn't control. So we jogged in there at a fine time when the dew was on the grass and all the world was hushed and peaceful. I tied old Critter to the hitch rail and looked around. It sure was quiet and dewy there.
Good morning, Mr. Cotton. I've been expecting you.
The man stood in the deep dark of the veranda, and I'd missed him. I looked around, trying to make sense of it.
In a few minutes, there will be light enough. I'm Cletus Carboy. This was the right place to come. Now that Scruple's men have turned you into a bullseye, and Mrs. Argo has evicted you and your horse from her rooms, and you have turned down Amanda Truville's advances, and that thug Arnold has knocked you senseless a few more times than you appreciate, I imagine you would enjoy a haven.
How do you know all that?
Snitches, Mr. Cotton. I have 10 times more snitches than Scruples, and I pay them well. I even have snitches in Scruple's own little army. I have snitches in every saloon. Not much escapes me. I've known most everything that has happened to you for some while. But by all means, come join me here on the veranda. I am awaiting the sunrise.
A streak of soft blue in the east was tipping off the new day. I stepped up to the veranda, which stretched around 3 sides of his house, and discovered something I could hardly imagine. This man was dressed in a swallowtail black tuxedo with a boiled white shirt and a black bow tie. His dark hair had been slicked back real nice, and he held a little white stick in his hand. He had a little white pointy beard and a gold ring on his finger.
Have a seat.
He pointed to some porch furniture.
I was sort of looking for a place to stay.
My baton. As soon as the light quickens a little, I shall conduct the bird chorus. It is my delight. From the first soft note, tentative on the morning breeze, to the full symphony of cheeping and trilling and whistling and singing, we shall have our morning symphony. The meadowlarks and jays and crows and robins all have their own way of celebrating the new day. I like to think they take direction from me as I conduct their serenade. This is the perfect dawn, the best of the year. No breeze, a clear heaven, a soft dew on the meadows. A bold and brassy sun even now gathering itself to burst over the eastern horizon. And when it does, my whole orchestra will play.
Well, I thought, I had nothing to lose. Even as the light quickened, the birds started chirping. Pretty soon it built up into a bunch of birds, all bursting their hearts out, greeting the sun as it got strength and began rolling toward the horizon. I never sat through nothing like it. Carboy, he looked like a band director, only he was all dressed up in one of them swallowtails, and every time he twitched that there ivory stick, another bird joined the crowd. He knew just where them birds was sitting, and he'd look at a big old cottonwood, and next I knew them birds up there would start a full-throated melody, chirping like there was no tomorrow. Carboy knew where every last bird was hiding, and knew when every last sparrow would start whistling and twittering. He knew them metal larks, and he knew when the crows would start calling, and the jays would start rattling like snare drums, and the pigeons would start wooing. He stood there on the veranda, on the balls of his feet mostly, his arms a-flailing away as the music got rolling. Me? I sat behind him in deep shadow, watching the sun bust over the eastern side of the world, and watched that sun start to turn him yellow, like he was wearing gold. And then, off yonder, near the creek, I saw the sun glint off metal, and I didn't think none.
Whoa!
I just dove for Carboy and slammed into him and toppled him, even as a shot chopped away the serenade and struck the house just behind where he was standing. He looked outraged.
How dare you?
No.
He started up from the porch planks, but I landed on him again until he quit the struggling, and I pointed at that there bullet hole, big as a fist, in the window frame behind him.
Oh, heavens.
Crawl in there and get a gun. I'm going after the bastard.
Rudolph Costello Glenn. I've been expecting it.
If he was expecting it, why was he standing on that porch as the sun came up? I was going to have a little talk with that one.
Stay covered.
I got to where I first saw the glint and hunted along the creek and thought maybe I saw a place he had used to cross to the other side, but he'd vanished.
Glenn, I'm coming for you. I'll get you. You ain't gonna kill again.
But all I got for that was silence. I got back to the big house. The door opened smoothly and Carboy, standing in deep shadow, motioned me in. He was holding a small revolver.
You saved my life.
For the moment, he vamoosed.
The birds are quiet. The symphony stopped.
He was right. There wasn't one chirp. It was like a dawn funeral around there.
Settle yourself in the parlor whilst I abandon my swallowtail. A tea?
I never tried it.
It's time for you to try it. A most vigorous beverage.
I nodded. I hardly knew what a vigorous beverage was.
Excuse me for a moment.
He vanished somewhere, and I looked around that parlor of his. It had wallpaper on the walls. I hardly never seen it before, but I heard tell of it. There was them oil paintings of nature scenes, and stuffed furniture, and shiny cabinets, and fancy carpets, and everything smelled nice. I never been in such a place. The man spent a lot of money for a place out in the middle of nowhere. Pretty soon, a Chinese woman, she come in with a tray with a sort of blue teapot on it and cups and saucers. She smiled, poured some tea, and held up the sugar bowl.
I guess I'll just try her raw.
She nodded and handed me that blue cup and left the tea tray on a little table there. I sipped the stuff, and it were pretty meek compared to coffee. But I didn't see nothing wrong with it. Just meek is all. Some people live life meek, but not me. So I sipped away, and I sort of liked it, except it was too meek, and waited. It sure was a fine sunny morning. Them birds started up again. You'd hardly know that a little earlier someone had tried to kill Carboy. I just sat there. I noticed they'd taken Critter to a pen and given him a bait of hay, which was mighty kind, and got him out of rifle range of someone shooting at Carboy. Critter was back there, protected by the barn and some other stuff, chomping like he was enjoying some good chow. I just waited, and pretty soon old Carboy come into the room, dressed more casual, sort of like a king would out in the country, with an open shirt and a wool jacket on, and shoes with a little black on them, all clean and nice.
I'm glad you came by, for more reasons than one, and I'm indebted to you. Do you like tea? It's summer Darjeeling.
I sort of swill her around and down her.
It's an acquired taste. A coffee's an acquired taste, too.
I ain't acquired it yet.
You know, sir, I don't really know your name. Is Cotton your surname?
Well, it ain't rightly no name. I just got stuck with her.
Well, it's neither, then.
This here's making me plumb uncomfortable, Mr. Carboy.
I can well understand, sir. I'll call you whatever you wish, or just sir, if you prefer. The truth is, I was born under a name that has visited me with grief and disgust.
I sort of thought he might not like that name of his.
Cletus, sir, is not a name I would wish on anyone. The question was what to do about it. I could live with it and suffer, or I could change my name. But I chose another course. I decided I would triumph over my name. I gradually transformed myself into a person quite the opposite of Cletus Carboy. Now, when the sun rises, I conduct symphonies, and I support myself with one of the finest gold mines in the territory, and live in comfort and elegance. I have servants I pay well, and who enjoy being here. I pay my men at the Big Mother, that was the name of the mine when I bought it, not a name I would have chosen, an extra 2 bits a day, and also give them a shorter shift. The result, sir, is that I earn more, not less. I do not suffer from turnover. They work hard. They remove more tons of ore per man than any other mine in the area. We share in the benefits. I've given them year-end favors also, if the mine has yielded good fruit.
I sort of got the drift of this. He didn't like his name none, so he licked it. I envied him. I wish I could have licked my name, but I hardly gave it a thought. I just buried it, and hope no one will never know. Cotton ain't my name, and Pickens ain't either, and I'd rather die dead than confess how I got named. He eyed me with a faint smile on his face.
More tea?
It ain't got no character.
How shall I address you? If you object to Cotton, how about Bowweevil?
He was funning me, and I didn't like it.
Or gin. Eli Whitney invented the cotton gin, which spun the seeds out of the cotton and made it much more usable.
He was still funning me, and I was about to set Hightail out of there.
I suppose I'll call you Cotton Gin. A most honorable invention, and one you can take pride in.
I guess I'd better get a move on. Thanks for the tea and that bait of hay for Critter.
I'll have my Ling bring you some brownies.
I hadn't had brownies since my ma baked some, so I settled into that stuffed furniture. He rang a little silver bell and indicated to the Chinese lady to bring that stuff. It sure was working out to be a strange morning.
I have plans for you. Since you don't have plans for yourself, mine will substitute.
I didn't think I liked this dude at all.
I've given some thought to Transactions Incorporated, an interesting and nefarious operation.
Them big words were coming fast at me, and I itched to vamoose.
They are superficially a legitimate mining company, making deals for mining properties, but in reality, they are killers and thugs. They've been perfectly clear about their intentions. Mr. Scruples and Madame Trouville don't know beans about mining, but they know a lot about buying and selling properties. To sell this whole Swamp Creek district, they need good and valid titles to everything, including my mine. That's why Carter Scruples was so happy to relieve you of the stuff you had tried to hide from him at Wells Fargo. Now he can manufacture deeds and titles and validated claims at will, since you chased Johnny Brashear out of town.
I was sort of half listening, but then old Carboy got my attention.
I would like you to engage in a heist.
A what?
A heist. A robbery. Burglary. Theft. I wish to engage you to lift everything liftable in that Pullman car. Every deed, every title, every claim, along with the forms and seals and records. In short, I want you to clean them out so thoroughly that they can't make a sale to anyone because they haven't the slightest evidence of ownership.
Now that was an interesting proposition. Once I cut through all them big words, I got the gist of it all right. Get all them titles, and Transactions Incorporated's got nothing to sell. Not a thing for all its troubles. The pretty Chinese woman returned with a plate of brownies, and I plunged right in, collecting 3, one for my mouth and one for each hand. I took a good look at her, and she sure was pretty. In fact, she was the best-looking lady I'd seen in a long time.
My Ling is a beautiful woman, is she not? I'm thinking I might make it a union one of these days. She doesn't mind my name at all, you see. I've encountered dozens, maybe hundreds, of attractive women, but not a one of them wished to become Mrs. Cletus Carboy. But My Ling thinks it's a cheerful name, which she rolls around in her mouth. Yes, it's looking very promising.
I hadn't asked him. All I'd done was take a long look at that beautiful Chinese woman, and all of a sudden there was Carboy sensing what I was wondering about and giving me the what for of it. I really was getting to like this fella.
even if he was drinking that weak tea stuff. I nibbled on them brownies for a while. Carboy rose, pushed up a window sash, and let all the bird song into his parlor. Them birds weren't giving up, just tweeting and tooting away out there. I wondered if he'd drugged them all stupid.
The heist. This was a most propitious moment, you showing up this morning just when I was thinking about what had to be done.
I didn't know what propitious was, but if it was like eating brownies, I'd go along with it.
Here's what I want you to do. Either alone or with a crew of your choosing, I want you to break into that Pullman Palace car and clean out the safe. Everything's in there. I have a snitch who knows. Right there, in Scruple's private office, the compartment just behind the rear parlor in the palace car, are the keys to the kingdom. Now that safe's bolted to the steel floor of the railroad car, and it's got a combination on the lock known only to Carter Scruples, and that office door is locked all the time. Amanda can get into the office, but not into the safe. Inside that safe, my friend, lies the salvation of us all. And I will be pleased to pay you a pretty penny, far more than the $100 a month Celia Argo's paying you, to clean out that safe and bring those papers and forms and seals to me. And if you can't bring them to me, at least to burn every last title and deed and claim and form, so that nothing but ash is in Scruple's hands. Are you interested, Cotton Gin?
That's what comes from reading books. Carboy gets shot at, and is gonna get shot at again, but he's thinking about snatching a bunch of papers. It didn't make no sense. It was just the sort of thinking you'd expect from some dude that sat around thinking and reading all them big words.
You're crazy.
He set down his teacup and sort of cocked his head, waiting.
That outfit, it ain't gonna sit around, and it don't worry much about having good paper. If all that paper got burned, they'd still have them mines they stole, and they could hire smart men to do the mining. Meanwhile, they're shooting at you, and they're fixing to drive you out of the Big Mother any time now.
I'm offering you a job.
What kind of a job? I ain't a safecracker. I don't even know how to spin them dials. I never opened a safe in my life.
If you can get the safe to me, I'll take care of the rest.
You're getting shot at, and you worry about this?
Have you a better plan, Cotton?
The only plan I had was to string up Glan, and then string up the Apocalypse and Arnold with him, and maybe that would tone down Scruples a little. But I had a hunch if I caught the three of them and turned them over to the law up in Butte, they'd be back in business the next day.
No, I don't got no plan at all, but I'm working on one.
Your plan no doubt involves dealing lethally with Glan and some of the rest. How would that be any easier than snatching the safe?
A lot easier.
I said it. But I didn't believe it none. Those gents was pretty tough customers, and I'd almost rather try to get into that Pullman car and bust open that safe.
Maybe you're right.
Now, in all my life, I hardly heard someone say that. Most people I knew, they just thought they were right and no one else was right, and here was Carboy saying this. It made me wonder if he was some sort of weakling, caving in like that. Now, if it was me, I'd be shouting and stomping and telling him he was all wet.
It's not an easy thing to do, getting a safe out of a guarded place. But it's worth thinking about. I think that once Scruples and his lady know they can't sell those mines, even if they have taken them over, they'll give up.
All right, I've got a question for you. What are you doing to keep them from jumping your mine? They've moved in on every other mine in the district. You got the last one they don't control. And you can bet they're ready to pounce.
I've put some thought to it. Those toughs can't even get near the mine. I've men with shotguns guarding it non-stop. They're protected by guardhouses. I've let it be known that if any harm comes to my miners coming on or off shift, the criminals will be in for serious trouble of a sort I will not divulge.
He eyed me.
I have another little task for you, if you should want it. That attempt to kill me must not go unanswered. I would like you to answer it. The task is quite simple. On the next ridge from the Pullman car is a fine vantage point. I have a superb rifle I will lend you. Go up there, carefully, of course, and pump a few shots into the windows of the Pullman car. I don't want to kill or wound anyone. I'm not in the business of shooting people. Two wrongs don't make a right. I don't want you to kill. but I do want you to persuade them to give up and to consider the danger to themselves if they persist on their lawless ways. From now on, every time Mr. Gland pulls a trigger, a round or two or three will pierce the railroad car. If you're willing, of course.
I'm willing.
Fine. I've strolled the neighboring areas, and it's actually an easy shot. But perhaps they've thrown up a perimeter recently. You'll wish to do this at night, of course. If your wish is to avoid killing, which I trust it is, nighttime will let you see who's where in the railroad car and aim to shatter a window but hit no one. I think it might be instructive if you were to shatter every window in the car, don't you?
I was sort of liking that idea. It would send a few messages. I'll do her. He nodded, rose, vanished into some other part of his big house, and returned carrying a good-looking rifle and a couple boxes of shells.
Ah, it's a Browning.
He showed me its operation and handed it to me. It sure was a fine-looking piece of hardware.
Your safety lies in darkness. With the first shot, you can expect Scruple's thugs to swarm up the neighboring hills after you.
I got the idea. I hefted that rifle. I sure hope this piece shoots as good as it looks. He stared intently at me.
I will not stoop to their level. I don't want you to. I want your promise that nothing you do will violate moral law or the law of the land.
I hardly knew what he was yakking about, but I got the gist of it. I ain't gonna kill nobody with this.
That's what I want to hear. I hope also to hear that you've given them an idea of the true cost of their conduct. They've killed, or at least their gang has killed, and the same punishment awaits them. It is their bridge to cross. If they continue, I might change my mind about a lot of things.
Mr. Carboy, let me give it a shot. He nodded slightly.
Return the rifle when you've completed your mission, and think about the heist. Meanwhile, there's some bunks in the shed behind the barn, and you and Critter can make yourself at home. My man Harbinger knows you'll be camping with us.
He rose, letting me know the meeting was over. I headed over to the barn and found the bunks in a lean-to shed off one side. I had the place to myself. I hefted that rifle, sighting down the barrel, felt its comfortable weight in my hand. There was something wrong with Carboy's plan, but I didn't let on that I knew what. Them two in the Pullman car, they drew down heavy shades from rollers at night, blocking the view. If them shades were down, I didn't know what I'd hit. I ain't in the sniping and killing business. I wasn't even sure this was a good idea. My pa, he used to tell me don't draw a gun unless you plan to use it. Trying to scare people with a few near misses didn't make no sense to me. But I could see what Carboy was after. He was hoping a little flying lead would get them two crooks to back off and maybe quit. That's book learning for you. What a few bullets into the Pullman car would actually do is make them mad as hornets and eager to get it over and done with, and that meant killing Cletus Carboy fast and grabbing the big mother even before they got the man buried proper. But no one ever paid no attention to me, so I thought I'd do what was asked and wait and see. Maybe old Carboy knew a thing or two that I sure didn't know. Too smart for me. I hung around there in that little bunkhouse until dark, mostly looking over my kit, which sure wasn't much anything anymore. But I had a little of Celia's gold in my britches, so I could get me some new stuff. I wanted a long-handled union suit most of all, with a good trap door. Them things are real comforts. I looked over that Browning. It sure was a smooth-built piece, and seemed to slide open with a quiet click. It had a good heft to it, and I thought I sure could get used to a piece like that. But I hardly knew what I'd do with it. I got to that ridge that night and could look down a long grade toward the railroad car, lit by little more than starlight now, with a lamp glowing only in the rear parlor. From that distance, I could hardly see them other windows, and I couldn't tell whether them shades was drawn or not. It was a long shot, too far for comfort. Aim at a window from that distance and you wouldn't know who you was putting lead into. I'd need to get closer if I was to loose a pop. I knew them thugs would patrol, and I knew I'd have to retreat over that bare ridge, and if the moon was up, I wouldn't have much of an escape route. But old Carboy thought it'd all work out, and I was game enough. I needed to get a lot closer. That little square of light from the rear parlor didn't tell me nothing.
I worked my way another 100 yards toward that car and still couldn't make out who or what was in there. By now, I was getting deep into their turf and was looking out for them thugs patrolling the slopes. But it was plenty dark, and I didn't spot nothing. I tried another 50 yards. That car was pretty close now, but I was on the backside, not the valley side. The shade was open, but there was some gauzy stuff, so I couldn't see in none, and that's when I got to feeling bad. My pa used to say, "Don't pull the trigger unless you know what you're shooting at." I lay down in the grass and lifted that Browning and sighted down the barrel, but truth to tell, I couldn't see nothing except some light. I thought about pumping lead into them other windows where there was no light, but I didn't like that either. I am just not a sniper like Rudolph Costello Glan, coldly killing and not caring. A fair fight's one thing, but squeezing the trigger on someone minding his own business is something else. I knew I wouldn't do it. I didn't mind Carboy's idea of scaring them out of their plans to take over the valley, but I wasn't going to do it this way. So, that settled, I begun to back away from there. I'd have to tell Carboy I refused to put a bullet in their blind. Scaring's one thing, killing's another. I got myself halfway back toward that ridge when one of them thugs come out of the dark and jumped me. It was one of them jokers who was calling themselves the names of presidents. Maybe Arthur looked like. As he about slammed into me, I swung the barrel of that Browning, cracking his skull bone until he lay there whining. I thought he'd earned himself that headache. I had a few moments to get out of there. That or kill him. I took the middle course. I kicked him hard in the shin.
Time you left the country, or you'll get worse.
He lay there whining and holding his head, but he didn't have enough brains in there to spill out, and all I'd whacked was solid bone. I thought maybe the barrel of that Browning got itself bent, but it was in a good cause. So I got out of there and headed back to Carboy's estate over on the other side of Swamp Creek and got myself nerved up to tell him that I was gonna quit.